Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. On this week's episode, in the red corner, Clash Podders, come out to play, yay! Yes, we're taking you back to a time when guys could wear leather waistcoats with nothing underneath and not be in the Magic Mike stage show. It's from 1979, and it's the Warriors.
These are the armies of the night.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
And these are the Warriors.
We know about the Warriors. They're a heavy outfit.
They're from Coney Island.
Warriors? You guys are the big dudes, huh?
Now, they're in the Bronx.
We're going back.
27 miles behind enemy lines.
It's the only choice we got.
Between them and safety stand 20,000 cops.
While in the blue corner. So, your hairdresser gave you a mullet without you realizing, and now you want to take attention away from it. Why not try a vest top and an eye patch? And call yourself Snake from 1981. We're trying to escape from New York.
It's not the future we wanted, but the future that happened. Once a great city, now a high security prison. Designed to keep society's criminals in. But now, everything rides on getting one person out.
The survival of the human race, Briscoe. Something you don't give a shit about.
Kurt Russell stars as Snake Plissken in John Carpenter's science fiction action classic, Escape from New York.
So what connects these two films, and which one does it better? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles!
The Kraken.
Hello, Clash Podders. You think the orphans ain't with it? You think the orphans ain't known? I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
How are you both?
Good.
Look very summery, Chris. I like this. It's like nice pastel-y short sleeve shirt you've got on.
Yeah, sun's out, guns are coming out.
Love it. Victoria and I are dressed identically today, which is uncomfortable. We've taken them off now, but we're both wearing black jeans and stonewashed denim jackets.
Because clearly you aren't as I'm looking at you, so that's confusing.
No. Thank God.
No, and you don't see fashion anyway, do you? You just see people, man.
I do. I mean, I was weirded out that both your intros were about the fashion, which is it's one of the elements of both these films, but not the first thing I would think.
Okay. Okay.
It was late last night. I'm not gonna lie. It's not my proudest moment, those intros, but thanks for highlighting them at the start of the show. Appreciate that, Chris. So this week it is The Warriors versus Escape from New York. These are Christopher's choices. How come?
Lots of people suggested this pairing on Twitter when I posted a picture of my Escape from New York Blu-ray. So thank you everyone on Twitter. I don't have everyone's name from that. But in March, Matthew T suggested this pairing by emailing this connection. He says, fighting your way out of the Big Apple against retro-futuristic gangs. But I just love both these films.
Okay.
I wanted to do them. I also wanted to do it because I feel like it's about time John Carpenter got his due on this podcast, as we don't talk about him nearly enough.
Yeah.
I thought you were playing some sort of weird, I've got a new game that Chris is going to play on his own and then I'm going to tell everyone about it, which is not only connect the movies on 1 week, but connect both movies to last week's movies. So we've got the Kurt Russell connection from last week and obviously bloody Walter Hill as well.
A lot going on. And a lot in coming up stuff as well. We've got all connections. We've interconnected a lot of stuff. But no, I mean, come on. It's John Carpenter, who might be my favourite Carpenter with the initials JC.
It's weird how much I look forward to a John Carpenter podcast. Really do. It makes me feel good.
It's because he's magic.
Mm.
It's because he doesn't do the generic stuff we did last week, which was two directors just doing the very basic. He does something new with the genres.
I won't lie. When that synth score kicked in, at the start of Escape from New York, it was like a warm rush of water washing over me as I lay on my sofa, breathing in. It was like John Carpenter leaning over me, breathing on the back of my neck, going, you're safe now.
That's why it's so exciting watching him live now he does his music, because he doesn't really do anything on stage apart from stand in front of a keyboard and ever so slightly shuffle. But it's just exciting hearing the music, and you've got the imagery from the films behind him on a screen and then him just wiggling his bum a little bit.
Yeah. Yep, I'd pay to see that. So what was your clue on last week's show, Chris?
It was if you can survive the night there, you can make it anywhere.
Yeah, that's close enough. Yep. And then you followed that up on Twitter with
something to do with Gangs of New York.
Fair enough. So the guess is ganged up on our Twitter. We are at Clash Pod. We're also on Instagram at Clash Pod. Just the right answers this week. Congratulations to James Ozipew. He says the Warriors versus Escape from New York would be epic. Please say it so. Also getting it right, Peter Mahoney, Ian Hughes, Andrew Logan, Gary, who says, please be Warriors versus Escape from New York. But the winner this week is Gary!
Yay!
Yeah, we're back in the land of Gary. His guest came in at 8:03 on the Monday morning of last week's first episode. I basically think he saw that the title was being taken away from Gary's, so Gary stepped in, and now the Garys have reclaimed their crown. Well done, Gary, Gary, and Gary. You're the best. Connections. What you got?
Well, you just mentioned the score, electronic scores that are pretty much interchangeable in these films, I'd say.
Mm.
Even though they're set in the future, using fire to scare people like they're animals.
Oh.
Yeah.
So name the moments.
So the orphans, the Warriors blow up a car and the orphans scatter.
The orphans are weirdly frightened of a Molotov cocktail that hasn't gone that near them.
Like it.
But they are wimps. They do say they're wimps and they turn out.
And they've never seen fire. And the cabbie lobs a Molotov cocktail down an alleyway to scare someone away.
True that. True that.
Famous opening scenes that were rightly cut.
I only know the Escape from New York one because Warriors wasn't my film. Are you going to do it, V, or can Chris tell me now?
I didn't know it was a full six. Go on, you do it.
Well, no, we'll do it when we get to the movie.
All right, fine.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. Okay. We might not.
Well, I mean, it's Vicky's movie, so...
we'll see how I feel.
Are you prepped, Chris, in case Vicky doesn't know it?
Yeah, I mean, we all would have watched the famous cut opening scene from The Warriors, wouldn't we?
Yeah, boy!
Using public transport in New York...
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think it's quite interesting that, well, I say quite interesting. I think it's vaguely, I mean, if you've got nothing to do, then this fact is sort of there. It's cabbie is obviously a cab, and then you've got the bloody trains, the subway.
Sure.
A lot of catching trains in the world.
They've both got modes of transport in them.
Yeah. Yes, they do.
This is more thematic, but I feel like these both reflect the hell that was New York in the 1970s.
New York, terrible place for an all-nighter. It is hell.
Because you had Son of Sam killing people for about a year. You had the blackouts, you had looting, you had riots, you had the police losing their powers. And it spawned quite a lot of movies, including these two. But you had Taxi Driver, Death Wish, you had a bunch of slasher films set on the streets of New York. And both these films, although they're set in the future, they're a reflection of what was happening in New York at the time, which was not good.
Mm-hmm. Say what you like about Giuliani, and you're absolutely right to... He did clean up that city.
Did do one good thing.
That's it. That's all I've got.
That's all I got.
That's all I got.
All right then, great stuff. Let's crack into this. So on Thursday, I'm going to be breaking us out of Manhattan Island and escape from New York. But today, Victoria is ganging up on us. V takes on a journey.
You know what it's like? You're on a night out with your mates uptown when you're falsely accused of murdering the warlord of the Gramercy Riffs and you're chased back home by the Turnbull AC, some orphans and baseball furies. At least that's what happens to the Warriors as they're pursued across New York City after dark by rival gangs in revenge for the assassination of Cyrus, picking up mercy along the way, principally to slut-shamer. But it was a different time. It was the future. And getting invited to almost the best house party ever, courtesy of the Lizzies, before the Lizzies tried to kill them. Making it back to Coney Island at daybreak, they are confronted by Luther, resplendent with bottle fingers, before the Riffs arrive to break up the fight and say, hey, sorry about setting blood-hungry hordes to hunt you down all night. Classic misunderstanding. We know it was Luther all along. Our bad. And the gang stroll away down the beach as the sun rises. Who fancies a bacon sandwich?
Cracking synopsis. That is a cracking synopsis.
Thanks, Chris. So I'd never seen this film before.
Lovely. Lovely jubbly. Lovely jubbly.
I'd never even heard of it. What? I've got to be honest. No, I've never heard of it.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's been a wild ride.
Mm. I'll go next. Never seen it before. This is the first watch for me.
What? You're joking.
Can you believe that? No way.
That makes me really happy.
Of course it
I'm
does.
I'm so excited to hear what you've got to say.
Yeah, because and also it makes you the daddy of the show. It makes you go, well, let me tell you children a little bit about this film.
No, I don't have a huge history with it. I saw it when I was about 15 and thought it was super cool and really enjoyed it. And I've probably seen it a couple of times since.
Because it is for people, well, you're that generation then. Because this is a movie that there were kids at my school. I just missed the window. And I have this real pride thing where if I miss the window of a movie and everyone knows about it, I sort of dig my heels in and rather than go, I better watch that so I can join in with, Warriors come out to play, yay. I just go, no. No, I'm watching
not
something else.
Me,
not doing that, so that's not fun.
It had this awesome poster, but I found it kind of frightening when I was a kid, that poster in the video store. So I think that put me off it early days.
Mm. What was the poster?
It's sort of an illustration of a bunch of different gang members, but the Baseball Fury guy is sort of second to front, and he looks particularly weird and scary. Like, it just seemed like this was a freak show of a movie, which it isn't really. I mean, maybe it is, but the Baseball Furies aren't as frightening in the movie as they were to me on that poster.
No, they're rubbish in the movie. I mean, that bit where he just goes, oh, can we stop running and just kick these guys in? It's like, well,
please
okay.
Stop running. Yeah. Please do some fighting.
If the baseball bat is your weapon of choice, you should know how to use it.
Oh, shit, there's another connection. Baseball bats as weapons.
Yes, very good. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, let's all forget about the public transport connection.
Would you like to go through the full oral history? No, I'm just kidding. A little bit of history of the film.
Lovely.
I say that because I did lift 100% of this from a 2005 article in The Fader, which does do a full oral history. And if you like The Warriors, I would highly recommend it because it goes into a lot of detail with a lot of the cast, the director, the writer of the book about making this film and like what a nuts experience it was, like filming in New York and paying off real life gangs so that they could shoot where they needed to shoot. And then sometimes people weren't paid off and they couldn't film down certain alleys because people would be murdered, etc. So it just sound, you know, fun.
Wow, that's crazy. I was reading about the making of The Godfather recently, and there was a similar thing with that where they had to just basically convince the mafia families that they were okay and this movie was going to be, you know,
a PR exercise.
Yeah, I guess so. It's going to make them look pretty cool and people were going to go, well, the mafia don't seem that bad anymore.
It's a family thing.
Yeah, right. And in the end, like it all worked out. The mafia were like, anything you need, just call us. But for a while, it was like, this might not get made.
Yeah. So it's a bit like that. Mm. Okay, so writer-director Walter Hill, he was going to do a Western with Roger Spottiswood. Roger Spottiswood, who would then later work with Walter Hill on 48 Hours. The financing fell away. So they're in a bit of a scramble with Paramount. He knew, Lawrence Gordon, who produced it, knew that Paramount were interested in youth movies. So they take the book, The Warriors, by Sol Urich. Hilariously, this article I'm talking about does, like, I'm not going to do it justice, but Sol Urich is like, not my best book. I wrote it in 3 weeks. So he's quite dismissive about the IP, if you will.
Man, I'd love to write something in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
A book?
But he was essentially doing an adaptation, wasn't he?
He was. So it's an adaptation of the Greek tale of Anabasis by Xenophon. Do either of you know this? No, I'd never heard of this, obviously. But it narrates the expedition, thanks Wikipedia, of a large army of Greek mercenaries hired by Cyrus the Younger, interesting, to help seize the throne of Persia. That's it. So it's this huge, sprawling epic where they march across Greece.
Is there a lot of getting on and off boats in it?
Probably.
Well, the idea is that they know they've succeeded at the end when they get to water, when they reach water, which is what happens in The Warriors as well, once they hit the beach. So thematically, yeah. they do have the same ending.
Right.
And it was supposed to be... does it say it's in the article about Orson Welles?
Yeah, that's the bit. Is that not the deleted scene that you're talking about?
No. They've got footage, but they never got his voice. One of the scenes it was going to start with was pictures, drawings of this Greek scene with the words underneath saying, over two millenniums ago, an army of Greek soldiers find themselves isolated in the middle of the Persian Empire. And Orson Welles was going to narrate that because he'd worked with Larry Gordon on something, but that fell through. And it would have been a weird way to open the film to talk about this other story. Yeah. It's not necessary.
Yeah, so in this...
Do you think... I'm a real sucker for when a movie goes, this is based on some Greek mythology. I'm like, well, there you go. How about this? this is not just a movie, but this is history. I'm learning and enjoying.
But I like the fact they're building their own mythology this way. It's this urban adventure. And then you don't just see them as Greek warriors. I sort of see them as knights almost on a quest against these other groups of knights. I think it's better to take what you want from it rather than be told.
I'm unsure. Walter Hill also said, so apart from Orson Welles, the narrated intro, which got dropped, he was also going to have a title card that said sometime in the future before the film starts. Mm. So that was dropped as well.
I'd like that too.
Mm. Yeah.
I think that would have been great because there are moments in this where you go,
where are we?
What's this?
Yeah. Walter Hill said, the great minds at the studio thought that was too much like Star Wars. I thought the movie was close to being incomprehensible without that because it always seemed to me to be a science fiction movie.
Yeah, there's a bit where it's like there's a giant armed bus patrolling the streets and you're like, I mean, I get it. Like, you know, New York was rough, but the police would go, get that off the road.
So casting, in the book, this is according to Sol Urich, so I'm quoting, in the book there is practically nobody in there who is white. And then Walter Hill was saying that Paramount wasn't, his words, too high on the idea of an all-black cast, as they explained, for commercial reasons. I mean, you know, make of that what you will. So the casting expanded. Like they went to New York, they got all the kids at the time that were up and coming to audition for all these roles. You'll like this, Alex. So Michael Beck, who plays Swan, was in a film called Mad Men. Walter Hill, being a producer on Alien, saw Mad Men and was watching it for Sigourney Weaver because she's in that. So saw Michael Beck in that and then got him to read for Swan because of that film.
All right.
Have you seen Mad Men?
I haven't.
No.
It's a very strange sounding film. Yeah, I'd never heard of it. It's an Israeli film about a prisoner of war. But I'm quite intrigued now because a lot of the actors in it ended up doing stuff.
Okay.
And then there's a quite a well-known story about Thomas G. Waits, who's Fox in the film. Mm. So Fox, who ends up getting pushed under a train.
We're going to get in. What the fuck is that moment? Yeah. Seriously.
What the fuck that is that that's him being fired.
Whoa! Yeah. I knew this.
It's really bad.
I knew there had to be a reason, but what's the reason? Wait.
No, that's the reason. So Thomas G. Waits in this Fader article says, I was let go about 8 weeks into it, which was entirely my responsibility. I was sort of difficult and the time I probably gave the director a little more trouble than I was worth. I was supposed to be in it all the way through. He was supposed to have the romance such as it is with Mercy. But Walter let me go, which I don't blame him for. So he wanted his name off it. So once he got fired, he was like, I don't want anything to do with it.
He's spoken about it a bit more since that article. And they said the two would clash over dialogue, the arc of the story, the way the shots were being framed. And he started sneaking off sets to get high and then come back stoned and belligerent. But also something that I saw him talking about, I might post this video as well on our Twitter. He says that he was unhappy about their, because he was almost like the leader of the gang. He was unhappy with the circumstance. They only had one trailer and it was very hot and there was 10 of them having to change there. But rather than speak to his agent, he went directly to the Screen Actors Guild himself and reported Walter Hill.
Cool.
And that was your point of no return.
Wow.
And so Walter Hill turned to his stunt coordinator and said, you have to come up with a way to kill this guy because I don't want him in the movie anymore. Yeah. And so they just murdered him.
They just threw him under a train.
They threw him under a train and rewrote the whole film. It's mad because there's then stuff that doesn't quite make sense. I mean, they kind of get away with it, but you obviously have questions because it seems odd.
Yeah.
And if characters sort of disappear or don't have the arc that they seem to be setting up early on in proceedings.
Yeah, yeah. He's the guy we're talking about. That's Windows from The Thing. He's the guy who plays Windows in The Thing. Yeah.
Okay.
That's how I recognised him. That's why I noticed that he'd gone, because there are characters that disappear. I'm like, eh, whatever. But I was like, hey, it's the guy from The Thing. And then he's gone.
Yeah, because he was difficult. He said he was unnecessarily argumentative, which might be something that you...
He teaches acting
understand.
Now. What? He teaches acting now, and he says, I do tell my students, just I tell them everything I did so they won't do it.
Don't do that. So I've got other stuff from the article which I can drop in throughout. So unless there's anything else, team.
I have an exciting bit of trivia. We have our first nine movie man involved with this film.
It's not James Horner, is it?
It's not. It's not. It's not a musical person this time.
Okay.
It is Mr. Frank Marshall.
No.
It's the ninth Clash Pod film he's produced. Gremlins, Goonies, Young Sherlock Holmes, Inner Space, Gremlins 2, Hook, Congo, Sixth Sense, and now The Warriors.
What a busy man.
And there might be some more Frank Marshall coming
probably.
Up very soon.
Yeah, I reckon so.
You can't wait to do that announcement, can you?
He's exciting.
All right, so let's talk about the film. And obviously, just, you know, you'll have to excuse my... Yeah, this is the first time I've seen this film. So imagine me at the, you know, going through this.
What's that mean?
I don't understand.
What does that mean?
We don't need to imagine you going through it because you're about to go through it.
Okay, fine. So we meet the Warriors.
Oh, can I interject? No, because it's this alternate opening.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So there is a 5-minute sequence that they shot to open the film, and it's on the boardwalk in Coney Island. It's daylight, and Cleon is sitting... the African-American leader of the Warriors. He's sitting on a bench. His girlfriend comes over, says, I don't want you going. I'm worried about this. This doesn't sound right. Cleon says, I don't care. I'm going.
Yeah.
I'm a warrior. We're going to go. And then he stands in front of all the Warriors and they have like a meeting on the boardwalk. And they talk about the fact they're a street family of 120, the Warriors, but these nine have been chosen. He gives each one their role. We see Swan made second in command war chief at that point. And Ajax becomes... just a soldier, and Ajax starts complaining, and Cleon says, try and keep your mouth shut, because obviously that stuff comes back. And that was in the film. And then at test screenings, it wasn't test screenings, it was more the studio saying, and the editor saying, it shouldn't start in daylight. This is a nighttime movie. It takes you out of the film a bit that it goes from daylight to night. Let's start at night, carry on, and then the only daylight we get is at the conclusion. And so what he ended up doing was shooting those little inserts that you're about to talk about while they're doing the train journey.
Yeah.
So it's very different.
I quite like the sound of it. I'm sorry. I quite like it.
It establishes everything very well, but I can kind of see the point. And there's that forward motion of that train journey as well gets you into it much quicker.
I think what I missed was the, at the start of any film, you are allowed an exposition dump. So it would have been good to have that sort of exposition, even if you've got the forward motion, the literal forward motion and the energy of them going to the Bronx.
Sure. It's the exposition. And it's also just a little bit of character setup, understanding relationships. Because I felt myself sort of having to learn on the fly who everyone was. Mm. And I could have done with just a little bit like, this is who this guy is. So there you go. Follow that.
Or, like, I love the stylized sequence of getting to the Bronx. It is really good fun, but they're called the Warriors, and I didn't see them doing any warring. They were just like kids. So maybe if there'd been like a setup where you can get a lot of character over in a fight, that would have done it for me as well.
Yeah, I quite like that though, because I was waiting to see why they were called the Warriors. Yeah. I quite like the slow build. It's like, are they actually any good? Oh, yeah, they are good at fighting. Take that, Baseball Furies.
So they're off to the Bronx to have like a gang meetup with no weapons, and they're going to talk with Cyrus, who is the leader of the Rifts, the biggest gang in the city. So then Sol Urich in this interview says, I thought the speed with which we got to the meeting was terrific, but once Cyrus made his speech, it all fell apart because the guy was terrible, which I didn't see. I thought he was really good.
My God. He is fantastic.
He's good, yes.
Oh my God.
Fantastic. Do you know who I think watched that speech before giving his famous speech in Zion? Lawrence Fishburne. It reminded me a lot of the big Zion speech for 100 years.
It made me think of Obama a bit as well. The can you dig it? It's a bit like yes, we can.
Yeah.
In the way he would say that.
I was distracted by the fact that I've always wondered where that sample came from. I was massively into a band called Popple Eat Itself as a kid. They had a song called Can You Dig It? I'd never seen Warriors because I dug my heels in. And then I'm like, oh my God, can you dig it?
And it's also the sample at the start of that song, Let's Get Down to It, Boppers. That's how that song starts.
Oh, yeah.
PWEI, Popperly Itself, my favourite band as a kid. Clint Mansell obviously went on to have a huge career in Hollywood from the lead singer of Popperly Itself doing all Darren Aronofsky's movies.
I do think the Cyrus speech is good. I think the way that he makes all the gang kids like aware of their power. So he's like, there's 60,000 of us, there's 20,000 cops. New York is their turf. It would have been amazing for me as a first time viewer, that why they think New York is theirs, because these are a multi-ethnic group of people. There are no women there, but we'll get onto that obviously a bit later. But if all the gangs are sort of multiple ethnicities, it's not necessarily like an equal rights thing as it would be in a speech like that. So why do they believe that New York is theirs? Like, what is their uniting thread that he's trying to pull on to say we can do this together? Does that make sense? Like, what's their ideological justification for grabbing New York the way that they intend to?
Is it not just because New York's completely broken, so there's an opportunity there?
So it's like the haves and the have-nots kind of thing.
Yeah, and the fact that they outnumber the police 3-1. Although I don't think his maths works out in this scene. He does a lot of numbers here.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure they all work out. But the fact that they outnumber the police 3-1 makes... I mean, why wouldn't you just take charge? Because these are also hardened criminals. We don't see a huge amount of that, and the Warriors are quite heroic, but
yeah,
these are bad people.
I suppose if it's just, it's really basic, but if you said they have everything and we have nothing, so now we're going to take their everything, I'll be like, oh, okay, I get it. But so Walter Hill wanted real gang members in the scene, which was filmed in Riverside Park, and they had off-duty police officers. So there were gang members in there, and obviously there's all the cast, but they had off-duty police officers to make sure that nothing bad happened, although apparently there were quite a lot of fights. Just, you know.
Well, it's weird because it's the second scene in the movie. This is the biggest scene in the movie. It's the most expensive scene in the movie. It's the most complicated scene in the movie. And it's all up front.
Mm. Looks good, though.
Yeah, it does.
It looks really good.
Yeah, I'm just disappointed that we, in the run-up to it, we saw a lot of different groups of gangs. And we saw the mimes, but we never see the mimes
again. Imagine my surprise. It's like, fucking mimes.
I need to know more about the mimes.
I mean, it would be fun because they'd be like silent assassins. Like, you'd never hear them coming.
But when there's no one else around, are they still silent with each other?
I think they probably are, yeah. True method. So let's talk about David Patrick Kelly, my actual boyfriend.
What?
This came up when I think I said he's best known for The Warriors when he was in a previous film, and you went, no, he's best known for being T-Bird. And I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure he's better known for
Commando. There ain't
Commando.
No coming back.
Commando.
What? Yeah, whatever. Commando.
You said you'd kill me last, Matrix.
He's definitely best known for this.
No.
Even though the film isn't as famous.
No.
This is fascinating. No, so this is where I was like, okay, is this how it works that someone just goes, it was them what did it,
yeah,
and that sets everything in motion. Yep. He just goes, it was the Warriors, right? That's stupid.
So he frames them to turn everyone against them.
He doesn't frame them.
Well, no, he doesn't really frame them. He just points at them.
Yeah, framing requires some sort of like, I got a plan here, guys. I want to kill him and I don't want us to get done for it. So I'm going to make it look like the Warriors did it. But there's none of that. He just goes, they did it.
He's insane and he's opportunistic. And I think it works.
Well, the energy he was bringing to his character of Luther, Walter Hill told him, you're Richard III. So he said that's what he tried to do. He was reading Last Exit to Brooklyn and Jean-Paul Sartre's Nausea for the kind of existential epiphany that Luther's got going on in there. I mean, you have to love David Patrick Kelly a lot.
He did that thing, you often hear this in films, but he didn't speak to any of the Warriors at any point during the shoot.
He's their enemy.
Smart kid.
He's a frightening man.
Mm. Yeah, he is.
He's good, but are you happy with him? Are you, Victoria? Are you happy with him just going, they did it, it was the Warriors, and that's okay?
Well, because there's so much else going on.
It's chaos.
First of all, what the fuck is a baseball fury? Mm. My mind is still racing from that. And also, mime gangs. So a man pointing a finger is someone.
But surely, if you're going to frame someone, you frame the mimes because they can't tell you that they didn't do it.
That's such a good point. I mean, second plot point, not to be too panicky, but the Warriors are like, oh, heck, everyone thinks we've done it. Why don't you just take off those waistcoats and go home? Because there are a lot of boys around. You will blend in, no problem. Right. But everyone knows you're the Warriors because you've got waistcoats on that say the Warriors.
You can't. They make it very clear they can't take
the waistcoats off. They do that with the orphans. But at this point in the film, you're like, just take the waistcoat off.
I think it's a matter of honour. It would be cowardly for them to take off their uniforms and go home with their tails between them.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that they don't know. Do they know at that point that...
That's a good plot point. Later on, when they meet the Lizzies, that's when they realise.
Yeah,
but that's daft. I just ignored that. I was like, what do you think is going on? So I just chose to ignore that point.
Okay.
Because it makes no sense otherwise. And I don't want to pull at that thread too much because I want to like it.
Right.
But it's otherwise it's really stupid. So they need to get home without being killed by some guys in fatigue, some guys in dungarees, some skinheads, some baseball furies. And then they can get the train, which I'll come back to because I'm not mad about that. They're rushed by a bus at this point that for some reason can't accelerate faster than a man can run.
And also when you're rushed by a bus, you do not run down the middle of the road. You just veer left or right.
Yeah,
use a lamppost to put
zigzag.
It between you and the bus.
Yeah, zigzag.
I wrote a note saying, how can they outrun that bus? But then there are so many people on top of that bus hanging off the side of it and inside it. I'm just going to say the bus was going slow.
Okay, it was going slow.
You're right, zigzag. That's how you outrun a bear.
And a rhino.
Oh, does a rhino do it as well?
And an elephant?
What does a rhino do?
I thought a bear, you didn't zigzag.
No, you zigzag because a bear follows the path that you've run.
Okay. But a bear can run faster than you.
Right, which is why when you are being chased by a bear, if you can, what you're
take
meant to do...
Take off your clothes, though.
Take off your clothes.
Sorry. With a polar bear...
it's embarrassed.
oh, God, sorry.
I didn't realise you were getting chased.
You take off your clothes and you put them in a pile and then you run because the bear wants to sniff you. So your scent is on your clothes more than your skin if you're wearing clothes, if it's not that kind of party. Mm. So the bear will go to your clothes and then gives you time to run away.
Okay. Better option that doesn't involve you being naked in the wilderness is to run down a hill and then do a very sharp turn and start running back up the hill because the bear will chase you, but it can't turn as fast because
that's
of the limbs
fight.
And it just ends up rolling forwards down to the bottom of the hill.
I hope that's not made up.
But it doesn't. It's just true.
Okay.
It buys you some time to take your clothes off.
Which is what you were there for.
Right. That's why I'm in the wilderness. Me time.
Are you sure you didn't see that in a cartoon? It's more like a cartoon than real life.
Pretty much where I get all my life advice from. You didn't tell me what a rhino does.
It can't run very fast because it's like you said, it's too heavy. It can't make the zigzag turn.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
I think. I don't know.
Elephant the same.
I believe so.
Come on, that was definitely time to move on from that combat.
I'm going on safari.
I'll tell you what, let's talk about this film after a short break.
Okay.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This week at Sukarnov.
If you're wondering how Ashwood City Football Club dealt with the news of the European Super League, then binge the award-winning mockumentary The Offensive this summer.
I think a few of the players are considering taking to social media.
No, fucking no. Okay, turn off the fucking Wi-Fi for all I care. Tear down the 4G mast.
Patrick, you've got a Zoom call with the other 14 right now.
The 14? What?
The remaining Premier League clubs.
Oh, for fuck's sake, I don't want to talk to those fucking losers.
Or if you'd rather get stuck into a comedy film podcast, why not check out Clash of the Titles, the podcast where two films with something in common go head-to-head to decide which one is better. Their latest episode saw Red Heat up against Tango and Cash.
In both films, I think someone says, where did you learn to drive like that? Which no one ever says in real life. Oh, I had lessons. But a nice callback.
And your nan has your nan balls about earlier. How many times did you take to pass? You passed first time, what about your written test?
All that and a whole lot more at Sukarnov.
So now we meet the orphans, right? Now, I really liked this because this is their first, unless you count the stuff that happened in Riverside Park, this is their first big confrontation, and it's with a group that weren't even on the radar of everyone else. That's such a smart choice, I think. They didn't get invited to the party. Like, how much fun is that? So to the audience, I think that's such a good idea because you don't know, you think, well, maybe these guys aren't a threat because they weren't invited, but equally, like, well, we don't actually know what they're capable of because we don't know anything about them.
Mm.
But the thing that really got me is they're orphans that just want to be loved. Did you not get that? Like,
oh,
they just,
sweet.
It's really sweet.
How so?
Because they feel, they're trying to prove themselves and they're like, yeah, we didn't get invited, but it doesn't matter because we're still brilliant and they just want approval. That's how I felt about that.
Yeah.
It becomes really clear really quickly why they weren't invited. They're just shite.
They're shit and they're a nightmare. Yeah. And they're scared of fire. So the warriors blow up a car. The orphans react like they've literally never seen fire and they scatter. My only gripe at this point was there's not enough fighting. There's not been a big fight yet.
I was, the thing that I remember from this orphan scene is just like Mercy showing up. And
oh my God.
She is fucking fantastic when she shows up and the way she winds up the orphans mm-hmm. and starts playing them off each other. And it's like, you got to do something. Look at you. You're embarrassing.
Yeah.
You're going to let them walk right through here. And they're like, oh, God damn it. Now we have to prove ourselves.
And that chicken sound she makes a very accurate chicken sound.
It is good. I mean, I don't know what her deal is in this film. Like, she gets relentlessly slut-shamed by Swan. Relentlessly.
And I think isn't she trying to pit the guys against each other because she wants the alpha male and she ends up with the alpha male?
Yeah, I think she wants just something. What's her line? Friday nights are good, Saturday nights are better, which is brilliant. I think she just wants excitement and she just wants a laugh. But I don't understand why you need to shame her as vigorously as they do. And it doesn't really, it takes up like the middle section of the film.
A lot of it happens with Ajax doing it as well. And it's to turn Ajax into a kind of villainous character, but it's pretty ugly. The stuff he says and does to her, the gay slurs he used towards some of the guys.
Oh yeah, that is relentless.
Yeah, it's hard to watch Ajax because he's a good actor. He's one of the most interesting characters. And he ends up with the shittest sort of storyline as well. So his character's a bit all over the place, really.
Does he end up with a shitting storyline?
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of felt like, wow, that's really good because he is this big character, but he is totally awful at the same time. And to have such an inconsequential end, it kind of like robs him of any big sort of like, whoa, remember when Ajax dies in it or like disappears or anything? It's like, wow, you just get arrested because you're a real piece of shit.
He has to pay. I mean, that's part of the morality of the piece. He has to pay for the way he's behaved and the things he's said and done. I just think his character deserves something a bit more interesting. But fair enough. If you think that is the logical sort of storyline he should have. They then do kind of forget about him, though.
Yeah.
Never gets mentioned.
No one mentions him.
Where's
again?
Ajax?
No one mentions a lot of people that die or disappear in this film.
I think part of that is because of issues with maybe, killing someone halfway through the movie, killing one of the actors off.
Yeah, so prior to the Central Park scene where Ajax is going to get arrested, we do have the fight in the subway and Fox is just pushed in front of a train.
Mm-hmm. Note, you can never look scary in dungarees and roller skates.
True.
It's just like, whatever that gang is, they are the worst gang in this.
That's the gang I imagined you to be in.
Shut up. I'd be a baseball fury. I actually wrote down Halloween baseball furies.
I've had friends dressed up as the Halloween furies. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really good look.
Oh, great. Yeah. Great.
I mean, it's a weird combo, isn't it? The baseball uniform with the Kiss makeup.
So, but what is it? A fury is a thing, isn't it? What is a fury? Isn't it an opera? Someone will know. You two don't know, do you?
It's a word that means angry.
No, I know that,
so
dickhead.
They're the baseball angry.
No, a fury is a character. Oh, for fuck's sake. No, it's in Greek mythology or tragedy. A fury.
I know what a fury is.
Well, then tell the room.
It's a word that means angry, Victoria.
Idiot, by the way.
But that's what I'm saying.
It is
something just from hell. It's like, well, it's in the images of hell. Like, doesn't Hieronymus Bosch paint them?
Probably.
And they're sort of feathered, gremlin-y creatures that fly around from hell.
I thought they were
the
part
of hell.
I think we may be going off topic a bit, but I thought, like you have a chorus in Greek tragedy. You have the Furies to advance the plot in some way.
Yep.
But I didn't know they had Kiss makeup. Maybe they do, maybe they don't.
No, Furies don't, no.
Okay.
Do you want to know?
Yeah, a little bit.
The Erinyes, Erinyes, also known as the Furies, were female chthonic deities of vengeance in ancient Greek religion and mythology. A formulaic oath in the Iliad invokes them as the Erinyes, that under earth take vengeance on men who hath sworn a false oath.
Cool. Mm. I'll join them.
That's pretty close. Hell, Hades, death, flying things.
Does it mention anything about shoving a bat up your ass and turning you into a popsicle? Which is a good line.
So then we're in Central Park. I got a bit nervous at this point because the baseball Furies are chasing the Warriors. And I thought, is this film just running and no fighting? But finally, there's a fight. Ajax is a fucking lethal weapon. I don't understand why we've had to wait ages for the first fight. Like, can we fight someone? Chop or you're down. Like, we've waited a long time to see that, but it is worth it. He goes off to rape someone and his friends are like, we should go and check on him. So they do. He's very clear what he's about to do. They understand.
Not check on her.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. He's very clear about it. That's fine. That's part of his character. But they don't say, do you know what? We're not going to do that tonight. They're like, we should see if he's okay. Which is weird. Then the next bit that I loved and would like to talk about is the Lizzies. Because obviously, I love this lot. And I was really worried when we first saw them in the subway, they were just going to be like the first girls we've met. And they'd be like, oh, we're just like, quote, marks, normal girls. And we're just on our way, whatever. But no, they're a gang and they are cool. And I liked them.
They're quite cool.
Okay. But not cool enough for you.
No, if the baseball Furies, if your weapon's the baseball bat and then you can't use it, that's a bit rubbish.
Yeah.
And if the Lizzies all have guns, they're really not. They're the only people with guns in the film and they're really not very good with them, are they? There's 15 of them. There's three guys in the room. They're locked in the room. They've got the guns.
That's true.
And also, they lose.
You've got to use the element of surprise as well, which is on their side. Don't give the people you've invited to your party evils all night and make them go, hang on a second.
Something's not right.
It's a good switcheroo, though. It's fun. It's fun watching it dawn on these. It dawns on us before it dawns on the characters.
Yeah.
What's going on? And it's fun watching the sort of light switch in their head.
Yeah, because you do relate to that. They're like, look, this probably isn't quite right, but fuck it. It's a house party and we all need time to relax. So let's just stay.
An interesting thing I read, I think the actor with the afro, he's gay in real life and they didn't didn't say that his character is gay in this, but he's the only one that doesn't get taken in by the Lizzies.
Yeah.
He doesn't get drawn into their sort of web of deceit, and he's not interested in them. And so he's the first one that twigs, and he's the one that actually saves them.
You're right. It is a shame they don't get one kill. Like, they've got an artillery.
Yeah, or at least hit with one bullet, an arm or something.
Hit anything.
Come on, Lizzies.
So then we've got Swan and Mercy walking the tunnels. She's begging him to have sex with her in a subway tunnel, which is so relatable. So the truth of the film is that Swan and Fox were swapped out once Fox was fired and pushed under a subway train. And the actor that plays Mercy, what's she called? Deborah von Valkenburg?
That is correct.
Thank you. She was saying, I think probably saying it just to make it seem like it wasn't like, oh, Fox is gone, so what are we going to do? She was saying that there was a lot of chemistry between her and Michael Beck.
Yeah, they all say that. And you do wonder if that's sort of looking back with tinted spectacles. But it does feel like there's something between those two characters. I do feel...
I don't know. I mean, I think there's a danger when you're writing things like this of thinking that sexual repartee is just being mean. And that's true to an extent, but he's just so awful to her constantly.
But then I think he's particularly tender in the scene when they're riding the train and the youngsters get on who've just been to prom.
Yeah.
And there's this awkward moment where they eyeball each other and she's embarrassed. We see her feet are dirty and they're all clean and dressed in white. You sort of see how the other half live. And she sees this girl looking pretty opposite her and she goes to fix her hair.
Yeah.
And he stops her and pulls her hand down. And I think that's a really sweet moment of him saying to her, I accept you for who you are. We don't need to change for these people. We are who we are.
Yeah, he's saying don't bother because you don't need to. You're fine as you are. And it is, I did like that moment. I think it's just because prior to that, he's like, why don't you put a mattress on your back? Why don't you do whatever? And it's like based on... Obviously, in the book, I think she was a prostitute for the gang or something.
A sex worker.
But, well, I wonder if she's getting paid. So, but in this film, if you're watching it for the first time, he has no evidence. That's fine. I can be corrected.
Okay. No, it's fine. I just know the glee that Chris took from that moment.
Oh, well, that's on him. I mean, I can be the bigger person.
You're the one that's taking glee.
The little grin on your face. Like,
move on.
Children. Honestly. Anyway, he doesn't have any evidence of what she does or doesn't do. And he's just constantly like, you're a slut. You're a slut. P.S. I love you. Like, whatever.
I don't think it's a tender moment, though. I think it's a pride thing for him. I think that's why he stops her doing it. It's like, you know, don't embarrass us. You know, we are this thing and, you know, we are not them. So I'm not sure it's like, I like you for who you are. It's like, don't do that in front of them because that makes us seem like we're concerned about their opinion.
Yeah. That's a good reading. There's lots of readings. So then we're back to Coney Island. Now, I've read this a couple of times. The first time I read it, I was crying with laughter so much. But now I've reread it, I'm not sure it's true, right? So David Patrick Kelly is back and he's got bottles on his fingers and he's doing the Warriors come out to play thing. Now, the quote from the article I read, I don't know, I haven't said who it is anyway. So two things. First of all, that the Warriors come out to play, the sort of lilting, scary nursery rhyme thing that David Patrick Kelly does, he said, I brought one of the codes of method acting, which is not to judge your character. I was influenced by this really bad guy I knew in downtown New York who would make fun of me and say, this is the first thing, Dave, on and on again. And he said it was the creepiest thing he ever heard, so we lifted it. Now, the other thing...
I've heard him doing it, though, the impression of this neighbour, and it is creepy when he does it.
So the other thing I read, he said... one of the actors said, we were in Coney Island and David Patrick Kelly picked up two dead pigeons and he had them in a bag. And Walter Hill said, that's not going to work. So then he got bottles. So in my head, I was like, was he going to put two dead pigeons on his fingers?
Yeah, that's...
And just waft these pigeons around. Do you not think?
On the making of doc, when they're describing this scene and how it wasn't Walter Hill that came up with it, it was him, it was David. They don't mention pigeons at all. That never comes up.
I really wish it was true that he was like, I'm going to put these two pigeons on my fingers. And he's like, it's too much. Would Richard III not have put two pigeons on his fingers?
I've heard you put pigeons
up their pigeon bomb.
I'm going to go with that. That never happened.
I wish it had.
I mean, he's a weird dude, but not that weird.
Just, yeah. But yeah, like pigeon popsicles, I guess. I don't know. Just anyway. That made me laugh a lot in the week, but maybe it's not true. So then the riffs turn up. The truth comes out. It was David Patrick Kelly all along. And then they're just like, yeah, sorry about that. Like, that was our fault. Sorry for hunting you across New York.
No one died, did they? Anyone dead? Anyone in jail? No.
Sorry for taunting you with a DJ across New York. So yeah, I think the thing I was expecting at this point, when they get back to Coney Island, there's a really good line in the script. I can't remember who says it. And one of them like appraises Coney Island with fresh eyes, given what they've been through. So he says something like, have we been through all this all night just for this? And I was expecting a bit more of an awakening from the gangs, that Cyrus was trying to unite them. But maybe when they were in the Bronx, they didn't really get the point of that. And then everything kicked off, so they didn't have time to try and understand his words. And they were happy with their patch, like happy with what they've got. Then Cyrus's death prompts a literal journey, at the end of which they inwardly realise that their patch wasn't all that to begin with. And so they're ready to like try for more, which is what Cyrus intended all along. But that's me projecting a lot onto the
film. I think the line you're referring to is them realising what this was all pointless because this is a shithole, Coney Island.
Have you been to Coney Island?
I have not. I mean, obviously it's different now.
I've been to Coney Island and I went by myself. That was a mistake. I got followed down the street by a man in a big car for quite a long time. And I was like, shit.
Vicky.
And he had these pigeons. And I was like, that's funny as fuck. I will get in your car.
But the finale is this Western standoff where Swan's brought a knife to a gunfight. Did you like his throw, though? His little throw into the arm?
It was all right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, did the job, I guess. I don't know. It feels like a big question. That's it. That's the end of the film. That's all I have.
Oh, you're not going to mention the cracking song at the end by Joe Walsh in the city?
Problematic for me.
Really?
Yeah. What do you think of it?
I enjoyed it, but I only know it from Rick and Morty, Tales from the Citadel. They use it in that, and I was like, oh, it's from Rick and Morty. Why? Why is it problematic?
Well, not problematic in that way, but just for me personally, because Joe Walsh was in the Eagles. He recorded this song for the movie. The Eagles liked it. The Eagles recorded it. I feel like this film, it's got this cool electronic score, which works, but I don't know if it's completely right for the film, but then to end it with basically an Eagles song, it should be punk. It should be something tough. It should be funk. It should be, we don't have hip hop yet, but like, I just think ending it with the white guy singing an Eagles song, it's just the wrong way to end such a cool movie.
I think that's fair.
Oh, all right then.
Shall we do the bits?
Yeah.
Alex, what was your best scene?
My best scene is the tube carriage scene with the posh kids. I really liked it. I thought it was a real moment where you're like, oof, there's a lot to that. There's a lot to that moving their hair. We thought different things about it, but
sure.
But I really liked that. And either that or the scene with the orphans in the street. I really, for some reason, love the confrontation with the orphans. And the guy, I don't know his name, who plays the lead orphan, is really great.
Mm.
Done.
What about you?
Cyrus's speech. I think that's a guy shooting his shot. You know, he's only got a handful of lines, but he is so charismatic that I believe that he could unite all these disparate elements just using his words. And so he's only been on screen for 3 minutes, maybe, and I'm absolutely devastated when he dies. And I think that's just good writing, good acting.
Mine's the house party, the Lizzie's house party. We do talk a lot about how hard it is to film a party, and I think they have made it look fun. Like, you would want to stay. I would want to stay at that party.
That is a rubbish party.
No, I thought it looked good.
I think there's like one bottle of beer being passed round.
No, is that true?
I don't remember a lot of booze at that party.
I mean, that is a deal breaker, obviously.
I wish this had been a big enough hit that we got a bunch of sequels, maybe following the journeys of different gangs that night.
That's a good idea.
I would love to have seen, because you know we meet, I think, God, what is it? 22 gangs, I think we hear about, but there are others around, and I just think there's all kind of things that could have gone off that night. I'd love to see the rest of the Lizzie story.
Yeah. Your most valuable whatever, Chris?
A big fan of a woman called Bobby Mannix, who came up with all the costume designs for all the gangs. So a shout out to her. But for me, it's got to be David Patrick Kelly, who, like Cyrus, does a lot with a little. And I want to talk about him a little bit in Thursday's episode, because I like to think of him as, in my head, he is the father of Romero in Escape from New York.
Definitely.
I see a through line.
There's such a strong
between
lineage.
Those two characters. Yeah. But yeah, I think, well, it's obviously his most famous role and I think it's his best.
It's nice to see T-Bird doing something else, is what I think. What about you?
Mercy, a.k.a. Deborah Van Valkenburg. I think she's just great. Like, from the minute she enters the film, she changes it. That first scene, it's a hell of an entrance. And then her relationship with Swan right up until the end just adds another dynamic to what at this point is becoming just a running around New York, trying to escape, getting on and off trains movie.
David Patrick Kelly for me for many, many obvious reasons.
And James Remar, despite his character being awful, is freaking great as Ajax.
So yeah. In the script and in the book, Ajax is supposed to be about 7 feet tall. And James Remar's only 5'10". And when he came in for his audition, he actually did that scene in the park with the undercover cop. It was him doing it to Walter Hill.
Is she an undercover cop?
Yeah.
Yes. I couldn't figure out because she blows the whistle, but you know, a rape whistle is a thing. So she blew it. At first I was like, she's definitely a cop. And then she blew the whistle and then she has to blow it about 50 times. It's like, where are her colleagues? She's like, I'm in a situation. So that's like, well, she can't be a cop because they would have come running. So it's just a usual person with a rape whistle.
There's 200 gangs running around New York. So the cops are busy.
It does take them a long time to turn up.
But he was saying he knew that he was too small to play the role. And so he pretended he was handcuffed to the table that was between him and Walter Hill. And he flipped the table over because he said I was quite strong at the time. Flipped the table, got the role because he said,
give me a part.
I said, I think Walter Hill thought I was bigger than I actually was. But he exudes that in this film. I would have thought he was taller than 5'10". Like, he exudes a size and an anger and a charisma. And he's... Yeah.
I tell you what else he's good. He's Vermin. And so is it Terry Mikos who plays him? Who's like the funny one? He's the one person of the gang where you think I would join that gang and kind of hang out with him, whereas everyone else is a little bit serious.
Yeah.
Alex, if you could change one thing.
I guess it'd be that the Warriors should play maybe some part in clearing their name. So it's not just like, we've just worked out it wasn't you guys. So, yeah. On your way. I think that I know it's a different movie, but I think either they should have had some part in clearing their name or there should have been a better reason for David Patrick Kelly doing it. Like, I'd have liked a bit more backstory or maybe just a bit more about these characters, like the intro that was cut at the start. I could think that might have helped. I felt like I was watching a movie that was, you know, fascinating as a sort of survival, very lightweight survival story, but I was sort of left going as I could do with a bit more, like, to stimulate me about why these people are doing these things.
With the David Patrick Kelly, though, they do ask him why he did it, and he says, no reason, I just like doing things like that. And I really felt like he was a precursor to Joker in that some people just want to watch the world burn. That's what I got from that character. He just wanted to cause chaos. He saw an opportunity to kill Cyrus, and he saw an opportunity to pin it on the Warriors.
Mm. Yeah, no, I see that too. I get that.
What would you change?
It's just weird. The Fox stuff is weird because it's straight. We're led to believe that the idea is that the Warriors are a gang who love each other. They're brothers. They've got this gang ethos. And then Fox dies and he never gets mentioned again, basically. And Ajax gets arrested and he never gets mentioned. And so I just think it's strange and it doesn't feel real to me. And I think that's because of these troubles they had behind the scenes. But it doesn't hold together for me that you would lose gang members and no one seems to be particularly bothered.
Yeah. Mine is put the subway out of use for some crazy reason that's, you know, it would be hard to do, but just write a way of doing it because it feels potentially too easy. Because when they're running from the bus, the feeling is if we get on one train, we've made it, we'll be home. So then you have to have false reasons as to why they get off the train, like there's the fire and all the rest of it, and then they get split up. But if the subway was out of use and they had to walk home, now obviously the geography might be a bit difficult, but maybe don't make the meeting that far from Coney Island. So they've got to walk home all night. So there isn't this one escape route, which if they run fast enough, or they're unlucky that there's a fire on, you know, on all of that. Like, if the subway's out of use, if all public transport's
out of
use.
They're not unlucky about the fire.
No, someone set
the
fire.
Another gang set the fire
off. But still this idea that if we do this right, we're home, very early on in the film, it was too easy. So if you cannot get home by your traditional route, if you can't get home the way you got there and you've got to walk, that's better, I think.
But did the fire not do that? In that they then couldn't get back on the train till they were much closer to home.
But then just get, because they have that thing in the graveyard where they're like, Coney Island is 100 miles away or something. And it wouldn't have been good at that point to say, and we've got no train.
Yeah, I guess so. Not 100 miles, though. Like you say, it'd have to be shorter.
Yeah,
so that's a long walk for one night.
Yeah, you can't do that in
can't
one night.
Can't do that. I mean, I could, but you couldn't. All right, any more for any more? Great stuff. That is the end of the Warriors. So, quiz time. I know we missed a week last week because we had a guest, but are we going back to the world of quizzing?
Back in the quiz, back in the game.
Don't pull that face. You love it, Victoria.
This quiz is called Gang Related.
Okay.
In which book and film do the Droogs appear?
Clockwork Orange.
Oh, she's back in the game.
She's smiling a little bit already.
Of course, Vicky's in a gang, so she's going to win this.
Which gang's biggest hit started with someone saying, the hip, the hop,
the sugar
the
hill.
Hip, oh. The hippie did the hip, hip, hop, and you don't stop a rocket to the bang, bang, boogie, said, jump, jump the boogie with the rhythm of the boogie to be.
It's like they're in the room.
Which TV gang featured the best Hellboy and the worst King Arthur? It's a TV show.
From when?
From not long ago. And the act who played the best Hellboy is in it, and the actor who played the worst King Arthur is in it. And the name of the gang is the name of the show, and it was quite a famous show.
The worst King Arthur.
It's the Sons of Anarchy.
Oh.
Who's the worst King? Oh. I had a different King Arthur in my head.
Sure. What's the name of the women's gang in the musical film You Both Won't Let Me Do?
Oh, it's in Greece. They're called...
The Pink Ladies.
Correct. See, Vicky, you gave him the clue. You were halfway there. Who sang that You and Me, Baby, Aren't Nothing But Mammals?
Oh, the Bloodhound Gang.
Fuck!
Yes!
Which film featured a gang called the Dead Rabbits?
Donnie Darko?
No.
Oh, shit. I know this.
I don't know.
Oh, it's going to really bug me as well. The Dead Rabbits. Oh, it's against New York.
It is. It's been mentioned today. Alex has won. Do you want the tiebreaker? Who had a hit with Celebration and Get Down on It?
Cool and the Gang.
Correct. Yeah. Alex wins 4-2. Well played, Alex.
There's a new sound. I've never done that sound before.
Why are you making a train sound?
I don't know. It's the victory train and I'm on it. Brilliant stuff. Right then. Victoria.
Yeah.
Let's look ahead to next week. Obviously, we got Thursday coming up, which is Escape from New York, but it's your pick for next week. What's your clue?
My clue
This doesn't bode well. If you're laughing already, it means it's a shaky clue at best.
No, it's not. It's a good one. Are you ready? Short dick energy. Sorry, I'll do it again. Yep. Short dick energy.
That's a freaking great clue.
Thank you.
It is an excellent clue.
That is a great clue.
And I will add to that, listening to the end next week, on Thursday rather, because we've also got an announcement regarding our next mini season.
We got a mini season coming up. We've got a great clue in short dick energy. And that is the end of this show. Please subscribe to us, rate and indeed review us if you have time. It's a great help. And check in with us on Twitter and Instagram at ClashPod. Bye-bye. Back on Thursday. Escape from New York.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.